I think semantics are important when you're talking about obliteration of civilization. I just do. Hello and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Gemma Forte.
And I'm Marina Perkis. And this week's Trawl has the usual clangers from Truss and Sunak. We also go very un-British and try to determine what amount of money means wealth. We despair at the rogues gallery of politicians we're stuck with until the next election. And of course, there are gems galore from the Twitterverse. Twitterverse, even. But first, Gemma, how has your week been? You've been, I hope, grafting away, banging the anti-Tory drum while I'm still on holiday in Le France.
I have been banging that drum on behalf of both of us. I have, but I'm going to get that to that in just a sec, because don't you think you're going to get away with not giving us the full lowdown on brother-in-law update. So for anyone that hasn't listened to The Trawl before, last week, Marina's in France on holiday, and last week you were regaling us with chat about your brother-in-law and just saying that you've been having a few little tete-a-tetes about politics and the fact that he said that thing that makes you go absolutely mad, where he was like, they're all as bad as each other.
Yes, that's my trigger, that is. So he knew that he was mentioned on the podcast, and he knew that I referred to him as a Wally on the podcast, but in a very endearing way. But he also inspired a tweet that I put out. So during a conversation, he said, you know, I don't much fancy Keir Starmer. And I was like, well, you do know Keir Starmer is just one person in the Labour Party. And he said, well...
Yeah, and also, he doesn't have to get off with him or anything.
No, exactly. So, we're not marrying him. He's just a leader for, a point of time. There are other people, I said to him, in the Labour Party. And he said, yeah, but there's no one credible. I said, what do you mean, Dan? That's his name. What do you mean, Dan? I said, you've got Yvette Cooper, you've got Chris Bryan, you've got Andy Burnham. He's like, yeah, I don't know these people. I was like, freaking hell, Dan. I was like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, come on. Like, if you don't think they're credible people. Anyway, so I tweeted this because I think it's really fascinating. And he saw it and he was like, I think he was getting a little bit sad, not sad, but a bit... feeling a bit sorry for himself. And he's like, I'm just fodder to you. I was like, okay. No, I said, I find it really interesting. And I think people find it interesting because this is what we're up against. But Gemma, wait for it. He said, but I don't really have an opinion, Marina. I just think they're all as bad as each other.
Oh, no, he hasn't learned.
Said it again. Oh, what am I supposed to do?
The thing is, right, it's understandable, like you were saying last week about people not being engaged. Fine, but then don't pretend to have an opinion. Just say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's absolutely fine. There's so much stuff I've got no idea about. You know, I don't pretend to know, you know, about other things. But with politics, I think people feel like they should know. So they just sort of make it up as they go along.
Yeah.
Well, bless his heart. And in the meantime, I have been here getting on with it. And I did talk TV for the first time. I know you've done it quite a few times. And it didn't necessarily feel like my spiritual home in the green room at first, because, you know, it's a little bit more right-wing leaning, isn't it, shall we say? Mm-hmm. But, you know, got
nice
on with it.
Room,
and
though,
I was on with a lovely green room.
Lots of snacks.
Glad you noticed that as well. Crisps. I had some crisps. I had some sparkling water. Yeah, and I did say that. I was like, oh, this is an upgrade. Yeah. So we love a nice green room. Mm. And there was a chap on called Nick Dubois, who's like a very right-wing radio presenter, but he was at one point a Conservative MP. And he was telling me about his house in Spain, but how he led the Brexit campaign. So I thought that was interesting. I said, oh, can you only do 90 days there now? He was like, well, no, because... And then he sort of mumbled something. So I don't know whether he's got a different passport or something.
Of course he has.
And then I was also on with Mike Graham, and we did a little section talking about patriotism. And he was saying, you know, I just don't understand why people are so unpatriotic. And he said, you know, on the day of the Brexit vote, I wore my Union Jack tie. And some people were really rude about it. And I was like, well, it's not exactly the same, is it? Is getting your Union Jack boxer shorts out on Jubilee Day, where at that point the flag sort of signifies something that, broadly speaking, most people are all right with. You've basically worn an item of clothing and 50% of people on that day are absolutely livid about it. So what do you expect? I also said, I think being patriotic for being patriotic's sake without understanding why is like having your brain scooped out.
Yes.
He looked a bit alarmed at that.
Yes. What a patriot he is.
Anyway, on that note of old Brexit, our favourite, Edwin Heywood tweeted this. And honestly, Marina, I was like, is this a spoof? Mm. This is a genuine Leave campaign video from the 2016 referendum. And I want you to have a look, or a listen even, because it's a podcast, not telly. So looking would be impossible. Have a look at the claims. Have a look at what's come true. Have a listen.
You'll benefit from better care provided by our NHS thanks to the reallocation of funds from the EU budget. Controlled immigration will lead to reduced waiting times for you and your loved ones. Excess funding that would otherwise be sent to Brussels could also be directed to education, meaning better prospects for your children. Your wages will rise thanks to better controlled immigration, which will lead to less competition for jobs. Your weekly food shop will become cheaper. Food prices will no longer be inflated by agricultural policies controlled by the EU. You and your family will benefit from a resurgent economy led by new and flourishing small businesses following the removal of burdensome EU regulations and red tape. With less pressure on housing, younger generations will also find it easier to get on the housing ladder. Politicians, both local and national, will become more accountable, helping to strengthen your community and others, especially those most damaged by EU policies, like farming, fishing, and industries like steel.
Oh, God. I bet that voiceover guy feels like a right prick now, doesn't he? Do you know what? When you hear that, it actually makes you think, how did it not swing more, you know, than 52%? It sounds like what they're promising sounds like pure utopia. But not only that, the things they promised, not only did they just not come true, we got the absolute opposite.
I mean, how's that resurgent economy going right now? And fishing has literally been destroyed. It's unreal.
And waiting lists and red tape.
And oh, wait a minute, politicians being accountable. Yeah, that one.
They're so accountable
now, aren't they? Don't put a foot wrong. Blimey.
And you know what? That piece of mad propaganda, it also didn't say, you will spend summer 2022 watching endlessly putrid bits of news footage of sewage being blasted into the sea. And I know we've talked about this in a previous episode, but I was so pleased to see Byline, at Byline, doing some proper reporting on it, which I tweeted about. So have a listen to this video from them featuring Libby Darling. So Libby is from the Green Party, and she's also a spokeswoman for South Coast Sirens, who are like a water campaigning group. And prepare to be, well, possibly not surprised at all.
The reason why the government relaxed legislation on releasing raw sewage into our sea is because they can't get the chemicals to treat the raw sewage to the water companies because there aren't enough lorry drivers. And the reason there aren't enough lorry drivers is because we don't allow foreign people to work in the country anymore. But because of Brexit, we don't have the chemicals. I mean, a lot of people will argue that it's not because of Brexit, but nowhere else has a problem with it apart from us. The EU have lovely, lovely clean beaches. It's vastly different. It's going to ruin tourism.
So it's going to ruin tourism as well. Great. Yeah. You know, in Blackpool the other day, there was a picture of like people coming off of the beach and there was a swarm of flies because there was so much poo around. And I just thought, I might stay at home. Like,
oh my
that's not
goodness.
What you're after on your holiday. It's gross.
Awful. I mean, that tweet in that video, it got loads of traction, which I'm really glad about. I think it was about 900,000 views last time I checked. But a lot of people under it, just like the lady Libby said, were saying it is not just Brexit. And look, I'm not silly. I understand that all of our problems are not just because of Brexit. But so many of our problems, if not just because of Brexit, have been exacerbated by Brexit. So I know, for example, I've had a few people that responded, and I believe that they are credible, you know, saying it's also due to things like rainwater overspill and the fact that the infrastructure was never invested in to cope with this. Well, there we go. Cheers, privatisation. So if it's not Brexit, it's privatisation. Just shitly managed organisations.
Mm. Yeah, basically, it's the Tories. And
it's the Tories.
They just
blame the Tories for everything.
If you can't blame Brexit, blame the Tories. That's just your rule of thumb.
But obviously, so the vote happened back in October last year. To this is the one that it, you know, it's causing uproar. It's resurging. It's the vote where Tories voted. I think it was almost, I want to say unanimously, but there are a few that abstained, and there were actually, I think, about 20 Tory rebels to allow sewage to spill in. And they're all coming out now defending their vote. And actually, Tom Harwood did a piece of this on this on, was it GB?
Yeah.
Is that what he does?
He was the only person that they could cling on to. Because as you say, they're embarrassed as hell. I think it was, as pathetic I can remember this, 265 MPs who voted, which has, I mean, okay, they didn't go into the voting booth and tick a box where it said, can water companies pump shit into the water? Yes. That's not obviously what the wording was. We understand that.
No.
But within it, so it's allowed it.
So basically the difference was you had a reduction in sewage and you had an elimination of sewage. So in the reduction corner, you had the Tories, and in the elimination corner, you had Labour and other opposition parties. And what they're trying to say, and this is the thing that really pissed me off, what they're trying to say now is, actually, we had to vote that way, because if we'd said eliminate, then what that would have done, that would have left the taxpayer open to a £600 billion repair bill, for, you know, of all the shitty Victorian pipes that have never been maintained and repaired, and would have led to, I quote, sewage leaking into people's homes. Now, like Gemma.
Yeah.
Okay. This really got me, because if I have, like, if I have a coffee shop, that's my business, and I've operated for 10 years, and I just take all the profits and I buy myself Gucci handbags. But I don't upgrade any of the machinery, and all my crockery starts cracking and chipping. And then all of a sudden I go, oh, got to do something about this. I'm going to just ask my customers to pay
£150 for a latte.
Repairs.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I'm like, what, sorry, what? No, you paid out £72 billion to your shareholders since privatisation. You fix your shitty pipes.
Exactly.
Don't expect the taxpayer. What? Sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly. Look after your house, mate. It's exactly the same. Yeah, it's like if you have a household, you maintain it. You invest in it.
And they're not.
Frickin' hell.
Morons. And then Lord Moylan.
Oh, Lord of the week.
We should have a feature on that.
Lord Moylan
is particularly inept.
Dark Lord of the week.
Whatever you want it to be, Gemma. He quoted my tweet with that video, and he basically said it was rubbish. Now, bear in mind, earlier in the week, Boris Johnson's own father, who was an environmentalist, to give him his credit where it's due, was on LBC being interviewed by Boris Johnson's sister, talking about Boris Johnson. And would you say our media is insular?
No, they look really far afield to get people on.
I think so as well. Even Boris Johnson's dad blamed Brexit and the different relationship we've got with the EU. But this Lord Moylan, Lord of the Lies, basically said it was rubbish. I mean, everyone reported on this, from the Mail through to the Mirror. But Lord Moylan, he thinks
Lord
he's
Moylan
right.
and Tom Harwood, the rest of the population, shush. Actually, that clip of Rachel Johnson talking to her father, I think I captioned that on Twitter and said, Dad, is it your son's fault? Because it was like absolutely ridiculous. So Tom Harwood, frankly, as well, if that's who they're turning to, do you know what? I'm going to give him unhelpful tweet of the week. I know I've gone very early. He tweeted this week, remember when it's like a child in a playground. Remember when the Remain campaign promised house prices would collapse if we voted leave? And I actually replied, I was like, no, I don't remember that, but I do remember. And then I listed all the things that he had promised. So Tom Harwood, unhelpful tweet of the week. Right, Michooks, into the trawl. And to get us into the mood, I just wanted to go over a couple of quotes. She's one of my favourite writers in the world, Marina Hyde. She's on Twitter. Check her out. I'm sure so many of you know her. She's a Guardian writer. This is from one of her pieces that came out this week that I did read via Twitter. Given the crises raging outside, the contest, she's talking about the leadership contest, of course, resembles a Dickensian reality show in which two grotesques compete to run the workhouse, refusing to be thrown off course by the increasingly desperate entreaties of their paupers.
I read that article. She's very good. She's actually a bit my inspo, her and James O'Brien. And another from the same article, she says, for now, Truss maintains the remorselessly upbeat demeanour of a holiday rep who regards herself as the life and soul of the booze cruise and whose lower back is tattooed with the Chinese symbols for only depressing people get depressed. The overwhelming vibe you get from her campaign appearances is she's going to make destitution fun for people. Now, Gemma, little secret of mine, I actually once worked for Club 1830 back in the day.
Wow.
I did summer 2006, Zakynthos or Zanti to people that know it well. And that description of a holiday rep, crowd appeasing, attention hungry Ms. Truss is absolutely bad.
And now I'm understanding why you're so good at Twitter. Because if you can cope with the lads and the crowds on an 1830s, you can cope with a bit of Twitter backlash any day of the week.
Can I just caveat? Yeah. I actually wasn't a rep. I was the office girl. Oh. So I got involved in some of the fun, bar crawls and stuff. But no, I was the office girl.
Okay. Well, that is a very lovely little snippet that I didn't know and I'm loving it. So the other thing that our Liz might do is blow us up, less cheery, admittedly. I mean, I'm making light of it, but flipping it. From one of the recent hustings, so there's a clip, and you're going to listen to it in just a sec, but Jessica Seymour QC captioned it, and she just put, they clapped. They actually clapped.
On whether new Prime Minister Liz Truss is giving the order to unleash our nuclear weapons. It would mean global annihilation. How does that thought make you feel?
I think it's an important duty of the Prime Minister. I'm ready to do that.
Oh, Christ.
Why are they clapping? I don't understand.
Someone has just said to her the words global annihilation. She's gone, yes, and they clap.
I know. And the other thing is, right, so I put this out on Twitter and just put, God help us. And you know, a couple of people, to be fair, came back to me and said, look, you know, I'm anti-Tory, but a potential leader has to be able to express that they are prepared to hit that button. And if you remember the furore when Jeremy Corbyn went very off script for a politician and sort of said, oh, I wouldn't really want to do it. And of course, here in Britain, we're like, well, that's very strange. You're not a psychopath. You don't want to burn millions of people to death. How strange. Now, listen. I get what they're saying. I understand that probably politically the correct thing to do is to say, but with some reservations, if it was required, if Russia were coming for us, you know, I would be prepared to do it. And I would do it, you know, the very, very last thing or whatever. She said, I'm ready. It's like, oh, not now, Liz. I'm ready. Like, she's up for
it. Please. Put your hand down.
I think semantics are important when you're talking about obliteration of civilization. I just do.
Agree.
Yeah, call me old-fashioned. Right, just one more Hyde quote, and then I promise, listeners, we will stop plagiarising and give you some original content. She also wrote, given the various crises besetting the UK, the seemingly inevitable passing of power from Boris Johnson to Liz Truss calls to mind that old political saying, out of the frying pan, into the heat death of the universe. And so on that note, Marina, into the heat death we go.
Oh, lovely. Okay, so first up, right, let's start at the so-called top. Let's see what our absent PM is up to.
But just actually, I'm going to interrupt, sorry, before we do that, I'm going to just play you a very quick excerpt from a clip because going to get to what Johnson's up to. But before we do, can we... Okay, so at Vic the Mac, Vicky O sent this to us at the trawl and said, I feel like Marina and Gemma could make a whole podcast about Pamela. The clip is from LBC. Here's a really quick snippet of Pamela talking to Ben Kentish. And then I've got a question for you, Marina. So listen to this.
I cried when I knew he'd gone. I cried.
You cried?
I did. Because it's just a one-off. He's an unusual man. I think the people he had around him, he should have got rid of earlier. But that's another story. But I know he'll be back. And I know he's been stabbed in the back. And all those that stabbed him in the back, no good will come of them. You know, they lose their job, they go on to other things. But they've tried to hurt him. And he's a fantastic man. And
what about all the parties, Pamela? What about all the scandals? What about Chris Pincher? What about Owen Paterson?
Well, they've made
what about
more
the wallpaper?
Of it than they are. I don't believe he went to any of those parties. It was a. I heard it was
Hold on. The Metropolitan Police found that he did.
Well, I can't argue with that. But that's...
Okay, so my question is this. Is that a piss take? Come on, she's not real, is she? I think that is a bloke at home having a bit of fun. I used to be a Disney presenter 500 years ago, and we were in the back of a van coming back from a shoot, and we were bored one day, and I called into a local radio station and pretended to be called Patrice, and I smelled like that forever. And we were howling in the back of this van. My friend recorded it for posterity, and I think the local DJ was like, oh my God, this is gold, this woman's mad. But it was me. I don't think that's real, that clip.
So I would love to say I wish it were a guy at home just having a laugh. But the fact that you look at the, I think I saw a poll recently, and it was the Tory membership, and if Boris Johnson was on the was available to vote for as PM, the majority of them would have gone for him. So
Well, then I'm sorry, Pamela's. I think
Pamela is totally believable. Yeah, and Pamela's hero. So back to Hero on Twitter this week. No, it's fine. Great for... Thank you for that. It's actually depressed me a bit. But at Parody PM tweeted a picture of Johnson. So he's obviously on his holidays. I think he's on his second one now. In fact, no, he's on his second one. So he did the eco resort in... Was it Sweden?
Slovakia. Like Slovakia.
Then he did Greece. Mm. Where he was shopping for feta in his suit, and now he's just popped over to Ukraine to visit Zelensky. So anyway, he was walking down the stairs of his aeroplane, and you've got the picture, right? So you've got the nanny at the front. So it's him, Carrie, their two kids, and the nanny. The nanny is at the front, at the bottom of the stairs. So picture this. Nanny is laden with, I count, three sizable adult bags, and she's just about hanging on to their toddler son, Wilfred, who seems to be trying to make an escape, by the way. And then you've got Carrie just behind, looking a little bit less laden, but still she's carrying an adult bag and their youngest child, Romy. And then behind Carrie is Boris Johnson carrying one child's rucksack. I mean, why is he such a useless bastard? And you just know he wasn't even going to pick that up without someone reminding him not to leave it behind in the aisle.
Poor Paw Patrol. Tiny little, like, nursery rucksack, which is absolutely...
There's probably some colouring books in there.
It's so unchivalrous. Flipping out the woman looked like a pack horse at the front.
Yeah, he's the sort, you know full well, he walks through a door and he just lets it slam on the person behind. He's just such an unaware oaf. Anyway, at Parody PM actually captioned the image with, I know people are commenting on who is carrying what in this picture. All I can say is that the nanny was asked to carry me, but refused.
Do you know, you are on holiday and you have logged on more than Johnson has on your holiday from France.
100%.
You have, totally. 100%. So just big up to you. You should be PM. What else have we had? Okay, this is, I'm going to put allegedly in front of it. Somebody very naughty called Stuart Taylor, whose handle is at 61 out of 1,000, replied, we may find out in 9 months that nanny was carrying more than Carrie realised. allegedly. There aren't actually any rumours about that nanny. Allegedly.
No. cover all bases, Gemma.
It's just somebody's silly tweet.
And you've got another one. So there was Club Cataclysm on Twitter, who describes herself as a slightly bored, highly medicated, and whose handle is at the stray cat, said, at least you carried your own bag.
The little Paw Patrol.
It was his Paw Patrol rucksack. It was his colouring books and crayons.
Oh, God. And seeing the lazy, work-shy, good-for-nothing lump instantly made me... Is that a bit rude? No, it's true. Made me think of Liz Truss and what she was caught saying, because I thought there was amazing irony going on here, right? Because Pippa Creer... Or is it Creer or Creer? I'm not sure. But she's the journalist who has just done so many scoops recently. She's the one who originally, along with Paul Brown from ITV, got the scoop on Barnard Castle. Do you remember that with Dominic Cummings? And she works, I think she's just become an editor of a newspaper. I should know this, but yeah. So she's had this sort of stellar career. Anyway, her latest scoop was this sound. Liz Truss got caught saying this. Have a listen.
Basically, British British workers. I once wrote a book about this, which got mischaracterized. But British workers produce less per hour than, and that's a combination of kind of skill and application. And do they, there's a, and it's very, if you look at productivity, it's very, very different in London from the rest of the country. But basically, no, because this has been a historical fact for decades. Essentially, it's partly a sort of mindset and attitude thing. Yeah, it's working culture, basically. If you go to China, it's quite different, I can assure you. You know, there's a fundamental issue in British working culture, and it's not, essentially, if we're going to be a richer country and a more prosperous country, that needs to change, but I don't think people are that keen to change that. So I think there's a slight thing in Britain about wanting easy answers, and I think that's, you know, that's my reflection on the election and what's gone before it. And the referendum is like, who say it's all Europe that's causing us all these problems? It's all, it's migrants that are causing these problems. And actually, what needs to happen is, you know, a bit more, the more graft. And it's not a popular message.
Right, so, I mean, the thing is, in the longer clip, it's actually even worse than that. Because in the longer clip, she actually references the Brexit referendum, saying, we say it's all Europe that's causing all these problems. It's all migrants. But actually, what needs to happen is, you know, a bit more graft. But it's not a popular message. This woman's supposed to be a patriot, and she's just slamming the working British people as being basically lazy.
It's absolutely toxic. You're completely right. But then I, you know, there's this horrible sort of pernicious little vein in quite a few of these politicians who have this sort of absolute contempt for, I don't know how you'd describe it, workers, ordinary people, the electorate, because there was that book, and James O'Brien has talked about this a lot, called Britannia Unchained. It was co-written by five of them: Kwasi Kwarteng, Priti Patel, Dominic Raab. God, what a flipping room of people this is. Chris Skidmore and Liz Truss. And there's a little quote. This is a quote from the book that they wrote. The British are among the worst idlers in the world. We work among the lowest hours, we retire early, and our productivity is poor. Whereas Indian children aspire to be doctors or businessmen, the British are more interested in football and music. How vile is that?
Pop music.
Oh, pop music. Pop, sorry, music, pop music. Oh, how pop dare music. People like music and want to have a little bit of downtime and be happy. And also, it's just rubbish. British people work just as hard as sort of any other culture. And also, you know, the poverty in India. It's like, what are you aspiring to here, you weirdo? Mm. And how much more proof do we need that they're not patriots? I mean, the Maya Angelou quote, which is just so amazing, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. I need to remember this for my dating life, Marina. It's such a good quote. And, you know, I referenced earlier Mike Graham talking about his tie and everything. And in the same conversation, I was sort of saying, I feel really patriotic about being British in terms of a lot of the things that make me proud about being British. The creativity, the music, if you look at the writers that we produce, if you look at Russell T. Davis and some of the dramas that he's written, or you look at David Bowie, or, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and name artists, or Adele, or there are so many moments, or the humour, or you go to your doctors and you just meet someone really lovely on reception and you just think, yeah, British people, broadly speaking, are really nice, they're really friendly, they're really good, there are so many brilliant reasons and to be proud. But to go around just going, I'm proud, I'm proud, I'm proud, I'm proud, without questioning what's happening, it's just vacuous and vapid. There you go. That's what I think.
I agree.
Anyway, Twitter had absolutely loads to say after the audio went viral. James O'Brien tweeted, they just hate everyone. It's not political. It's psychological. And I think you've got one, haven't you, Marina?
Yeah, Adam Bienkov, he reminded us all that just days ago, it was Liz Truss who said, I believe in Britain, unlike some of the media who choose to talk our country down. I mean, Gemma, if calling the British workforce the worst idlers in the world and saying they need more graft isn't talking our country down, then I would like to know what is. Of course, unless Unless, of course, she was misrepresented again. Yeah. It does happen to our Liz quite a lot,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, she said she's ready to blow us up. She didn't mean it.
No.
Standing by.
She actually meant the opposite.
Standing by. Yeah, and just the irony of, like, talking about workers not grafting and all that, and you've got the old PM twaddling about with a Paw Patrol rucksack. Actor Stephen McGann said, "It's curious how little regard those who most loudly claim to love their country actually demonstrate towards those people who embody it." Spot on tweet.
Exactly, and this is the thing I can't get my head around. They are the opposite of patriots. It's like they hate the British workers. Yeah. Writer and director at James Moran said, "None of these politicians would know a hard day's graft if their lives depended on it. No clue about the real world. Try living on minimum wage, working every day, commuting, struggling to pay bills when you don't get driven everywhere with everything on expenses." And this, I think, right, James has got a point here, and I think this really needs to get more airtime. So Richard Murphy is on Twitter. Really recommend him for a follow. He's an economic justice campaigner, political economist, and professor of accounting at Sheffield University. He published, like, frankly, a terrifying article in The Independent about the cost of living crisis and what we're about to be faced with. He captioned it with, "It's now impossible for the average worker to live decently in Britain." And honestly, have a read of the article, but the takeaway is basically he does all the maths of what an average household brings in, and then he takes away mortgage or rent, council tax, like owning a very modest car, water bills, energy bills, food shop, all your standard outgoings, all of which, by the way, have gone up. And basically, you're left with £3,000. Mm-hmm. That is it, right? For the year to spend on, I don't know, school uniforms, Christmas, a rainy day fund, I don't know, if your boiler breaks, possibly a modest holiday, the odd cinema trip, right? £3,000 for the year. But what happens if, say, I don't know, you need to repair your car, or there's something you don't see coming down the tracks that you have to pay for? He was pointing out in this article just how easily it is now for the average family to just tip into destitution. And that those calculations that he's made in that Independent article, that's a household with two working adults. So this idea that grafting alone, which comes from, you know, Truss and Raab and Patel, whoever, this idea that grafting alone, hard graft, will save you, well, it's patronising and it's totally bloody deceitful.
It's absolutely out of order. It's in the same vein, Raab sort of going on about these junior barristers who are on about 10 grand when they start, and saying how ridiculous it is that they want to strike and how dare they want to leave. It's like, what planet are you on, you beep? Similar vibe, I spotted this tweet from Old England is Dying at England_dying, who said, "I've just worked it out. It would be cheaper to go to Portugal for 3 months from December than pay my gas and lecky bill for the winter. Need to organise a visa, though." Oh, my word. It's true. We're all going to be like at the gym having our showers and stuff, aren't we? Sneaking in to use their lecky. It's got to that state. Still, at least they're all determinedly on the case, working really hard to sort things out. Sajid Javid, for instance, he's been well busy, Marina. He's been grafting. Have you seen how hard he's been grafting?
Oh, no. Tell me.
Well,
yes, I did. Sorry. So, yeah, so he posted this. Yes, Sajid Tone Deaf.
It was my horribly sarcastic introduction. You were like, really? Has he been grafting? You know what I mean now.
No, I saw this and I was just despairing. But what is he, by the way, now? So he was our Chancellor, then he was our Health Secretary. What is he now? Just waiting for the next cabinet.
I can't remember. I've lost it.
Do you know? Anyway, he grafted away, whatever he's doing, I'm sure. He put out a tweet with two pics of his face side by side, one with a beard and one without. And he tweeted, "I've been getting lots of reaction to hashtag Beardgate, after its debut on Sky News this morning. There's only one way to settle this. Twitter poll below." And he's literally got a Twitter poll. You tick, you press beard or no beard.
I mean, when he said there's only one way to settle this, it made me think about Harry Hill, and I really wanted to put fight and literally, not inciting violence, but smash his face in. I mean, What are you thinking? You're a senior politician and we're all absolutely freaking out about our bills. And you're like, who gives a shit that I've managed to... I mean, is this the growth that Liz Truss is wanging on about? Is it his stubble? That is the sum of British growth. Also, the other thing is, it's like, what are you, Mr. Potato Face? Here's my face. Look, I put a beard on. I mean, I'm sorry. I've absolutely had it up to here with them. Yeah. Freaking me out.
I think he was really proud of what he was able to grow there, actually. Something, some growth that he was actually responsible for.
Flipping beard face. David, who's at DavidMo87, who mainly tweets about Everton, commented, and I'm should I do a Liverpudlian accent or not? Because I feel like I don't want Liverpool. I love Liverpool. So don't get pissed off with me if I do a bad one. He put, nobody asked, mate. Electric bills are $4,000. Was that good? I don't know. Do not tweet me. It was bad, I know. But I felt like it needed it. And he's right. He's just like, nobody's asked you. What are you on about? And then comedian Tiernan Dweeb, weird name, but really worth a follow. He's funny. So at Tiernan Dweeb said, says it... said Sajid Javid's shit beard is proof even facial hair can't grow properly under Tory leadership.
Oh God. Brilliant. And Chris Burden at Wolfrunian Chris, city councillor and PhD student, tweeted, the Prime Minister is on holiday again. Rishi Sunak is pretending he goes to McDonald's for some reason. Liz Truss is saying saying workers don't work hard enough. Sajid Javid wants to talk about his beard. The country is falling apart. Do something.
No, it's just like an endless please.
I mean, so here from France, I've been, tuning in every now and then, trying to have some space and some time away, but it's hard, right? So I have been checking, and it really does seem like things are as bad as can be. So I've seen that there are more strikes on the way, which we've got to look forward to. Criminal barristers are striking. And by the way, I know you mentioned this earlier with Rob's comment, but rightly so. I didn't realise, and I actually think everyone's got this opinion, and I did as well. You think barristers and you think, you know, these top salary, 100K plus a year. And yes, some of them do, but not all. In fact, new criminal barristers can take home as little as £9,000.
I know, it's been absolutely enlightening. It's terrible.
Yeah. And this is because they have to pay for loads of stuff themselves, like so their chamber fees, transport. So basically, when you take all of that stuff out, and some of these cases really drag on, they've basically left with, it's below minimum wage what they are being paid. And that is due to government cuts to legal aid. So we've got that. We've got the RMT strikes. There's also, don't know if you saw this, Felixstowe Port. The workers there are striking. And I looked into this a little bit, fell down the rabbit hole when I should have probably been playing with my son in a paddling pool or something.
Yeah, but you can keep an eye on those little toddlers and do something more interesting, can't you, on your phone?
it's like dual screening, isn't it? Yeah. You can do a bit
if they're
of
in a sandpit and you've gone, oh, that's lovely. There's only so much of it you can take.
True. But the Felixstowe Port thing, I just think, like, this is awful, right? But... it's just another example, I thought, and I tweeted about this, of trickle-down economics. It's just not trickling down, right? So listen to this. Felixstowe Docks made £61 million in profit in 2020. £61 million, yeah. Right? Its parent company handed £99 million to shareholders in the same year. They pay... Oh, God, I mean, this was a facepalm moment. They pay Chris Grayling, yeah, he's still on the scene, £100K... for 7 hours work per
grafter.
Week.
Grafter. He's such a grafter.
Yeah, total
Liz
grafter.
Truss would love him.
I'm guessing as probably be in the next cabinet. But workers are having to strike over poor pay and their Christmas bonuses being cancelled.
Oh, it's absolutely disgusting.
How is that fair?
I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little ray of light. GMB is such a hugely watched morning TV, and they've had Rob Rinder, I never know if it's Rinder or Rinder, Judge Rinder. Anyway, he's so intelligent and he's been hosting this week. And I actually shared a clip on Twitter. We're not putting it on here, but go and have a look. He was fantastic on this. They had Tory Boy Pierce and Grace Blakely, who's a force for good. And long story short, Rob Rinder was really explaining that if you don't have these junior barristers, then you haven't got legal aid. These are the people that end up defending people who can't afford a lawyer. So it's bad on so many levels because it's, again, against ordinary people. So firstly, they won't be able to get any legal aid. And secondly, you are preventing working class kids or kids from... I mean, my kids, I'm like successful and I'm middle class, but I'm a single parent. I don't have pots of flipping money to support my kids when they leave home. Do you know what I mean? So then you're stopping these bright kids from other demographics of society from being a barrister because they can't afford it. Right, I actually spotted on Twitter a great little mini thread which encapsulates exactly what you were sort of saying just there from someone called Mark Dobson, whose handle is @Mark_Doodle. So here we go. It's a little bit long, but I thought it was brilliant. So he wrote, "You know what? Brexit isn't the problem. It never has been. It's Tories. Brexit wouldn't have happened without Tories. All of Brexit's failures can be laid squarely at the feet of Cameron, May, Johnson and their enablers in the client media. Brexit's worked as a lightning rod for our anger, but the people responsible are in power and were also responsible for screwing up PIP, universal credit, ruining public services, all before Brexit, and they're still at it. We're entering a period of extreme financial instability and we're on the verge of global recession, predatory financiers, oligarchs, disaster capitalists circling like vultures." So it goes on and on, but it was just really eloquent. And then at the end he says, "Whether it's taking to the streets or taking part in an organised act of civil disobedience, we need to act to end this before it ends us. But I don't know where to start."
And no one does. I think Gary Neville had a pop at this. Didn't he? Like months ago, he was trying to organise some sort of event. But why doesn't it take off? It's like, do you know what I think it is for me? I think it's like, and this is awful, but I'm just being totally honest. It's a bit like the petitions. I've signed so many petitions and then nothing ever seems to come to fruition. And a bit like, you know, what about the march? Was it the second referendum march?
Yeah.
I mean, hundreds of thousands descended upon London. It was an incredible show of what people wanted, and absolutely nothing came of it. So I feel like people are just completely dismayed by what their options are and what the impact of actually taking to the streets is going to be. I don't know, am I being...
No, I think it might be partly cultural. The French love a good riot, don't they? They're really good at it. So I think there's maybe a little bit like, oh, well, it's my weekend. I'd rather put my feet up and watch the footy than sort of trek in on a train and be angry. But I also think a lot of the tangible pain is still to hit. A lot of people aren't engaged. They're too busy. All of the stuff that we've discussed quite a lot. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but do you know what? That piece by Mark that you just quoted there, he's bang on. And actually, the thing I find just awful about Brexit is that everyone's starting to see in this country, everyone knows it's nonsense, right? It's broken, it's bollocks, it's making lives harder, difficult for everyone. The rest of the globe can see it. And yet the people who are in power, the people who delivered it, our next cabinet, are all telling us the complete opposite. I spotted this tweet from Siobhan Benita, who was mayoral candidate in 2020, and she's also says she's politically homeless, like many of us, I fear. And she said, "The Brexiters shift from sunlit uplands to it was worse during the war or in the 70s when we didn't have power and bodies couldn't be buried is quite remarkable."
It really is. This video has been doing well on Twitter, by the way. These guys make honest government ads. It's from @TheJuiceMedia and it says it all.
Hello, I'm from the British government with a message to the nation. As it clings like a desperate turd to the edge of the shitter, our strong and stable hand on the flush. We know many of you are facing uncertainty, like the uncertainty of who the fuck is in charge here during this cost of living crisis. Now that this sentient ham is no longer PM. Sure, you were probably wondering that when the pissed Merkin was the PM, his main feats being to flout his own COVID laws, hand out lucrative contracts to our donors, and get a shit ton of you killed. But don't worry, soon we'll announce the new PM to assume those crucial roles. Either this stunned mullet who's been specially trained to utter populist wank.
Introducing more varieties of cheese than the French.
Or this harrowing twat who boasts of stealing money from the poor, so both well qualified for the job. And when we announce the winner, we'd like you all to pretend this is a brand new government, not the exact same one that's fucked you sideways into a full-blown state of social, economic and ecological collapse.
Oh, I mean, they can see it, right? From the other side of the globe, they can see it. And yet here, so many people just can't see it. In fact, I understand why, though. The Mail has got its role in this, and it continues to do its level best to gaslight us, right? Bear in mind, everything is broken at the moment in the country, right? The Daily Mail had a front page this week. Bear in mind, everything is broken, right? Wait for it. The front page was about the NHS, and the headline read, NHS blows 1 million on woke groups for staff. 1 million. Like, in the sea of literally hundreds of billions wasted by our government, they focus on 1 piddly million.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, was it that woman, Michelle Moan, made 79 million on dodgy PPE?
Yeah. In fact, so Benjamin Cohen, CEO at Pink News, tweeted in response to that. The biggest takeaway from the Daily Mail's pathetic 1 million on woke groups expose is that the NHS seems to spend far too little on diversity, equality and inclusion activities, considering it is the UK's largest employer and the entire population uses its services.
Exactly. So the NHS is on the verge of collapse. The doctors and nurses are working their absolute tits off and for very little pay and so burnt out. And that's the sort of encouragement that they get from the Daily Mail. This is one of my absolute favourite clips of the week coming up now. It was a doctor called Andrew Mayerson, who has the same handle, and he went on the Jeremy Vine show and really dispelled some of the Daily Mail myths that they absolutely love. Listen to this. It's so eloquent.
The NHS is struggling for four main reasons. We don't have enough money. We have been underfunded for the last decade. We don't have enough staff. We're in the midst of the worst staffing crisis in NHS history. We don't have enough beds. They have been cut dramatically in the last number of decades, and we don't have enough social care. And so those four things are the major problems in the NHS. We've known about these problems in the NHS for a very long time. And yet, after 12 years in power, what are we looking at? We're looking at a government that has just buried their head in the sand, and they're well aware of all the problems that we're facing, yet they're really just doing nothing to fix them. And so it's very frustrating being I'm an A&E doctor working in a really busy A&E in here in London, and we are seeing the system collapse around us.
Yeah.
And he went on to explain, it actually makes me feel really sad and upset. He's on £14 an hour. And he has to pay fees. You might have spotted a foreign accent there. He has to pay fees for his visa. So that clip really stayed with me. Those four reasons why our health service that we've been so privileged to have, free for everybody, just run down by these people. And then the Mail dares to put headlines like that on their front pages. And with that in my mind, I went on Talk TV, and they were talking about how apparently some young junior doctors and nurses are just giving it all up and going on to OnlyFans and making shit tons of money. And so this is what I said afterwards.
This story is so sad because we've got 100,000 vacancies in the NHS and they are underpaid, they are burnt out, retention is a massive issue. Do not blame them. They can't afford to, you know, if you look at the Trussell Food Trust, one in seven people that are going to food banks are working. They're in working poverty. And that's a complete and utter disgrace because people should be aspiring to do these roles and they should be thinking, and if I do it, I will be paid enough to have a decent living because it's hard work. And understandably, these youngsters are going, what am I doing this for?
Yeah, precisely.
Where is the fact?
But they can't pay them 15 grand to work in those jobs, though, can they?
Yeah. So that's Mike Graham's takeaway from what I was trying to say was, but the NHS can't pay them 15 grand a day like they do on OnlyFans. It's like, yeah, I know that. They're not paying them £15 an hour. So, yeah. Oh
my goodness. I actually did see some of the comments underneath that. And, it, you know, I think this is where the whole wealth thing, our lens is a bit skewed, because underneath that, someone called Sandy said, I don't call 27,000 and 48,000 a year underpaid. I call it bloody well paid. And VanMan234 said, if only they'd known what the salary was when they joined. And then there was another guy, Keith, who said they're not underpaid. So it's all about, like, what do people think is good pay? What is underpaid? And it's a really tricky one, isn't it, Gemma?
It's really, really tricky. You're right. And, you know, there's no getting away from it. I've clearly got sort of like a middle class accent or whatever. And then you get sort of accused a bit of being sort of some kind of champagne socialist or whatever, who hasn't got a clue. But, you know, it also, of course, depends where you live in the country. But I don't care. I will absolutely hang my hat on this one. All the people that are striking at the moment, I think what they are asking for is entirely reasonable. And I think listening to that doctor, he goes into A&E and he gets £14 an hour after all that years and years of training. I don't care. I think that's underpaid. And you know what's even worse than that is carers. Mm-hmm. Some carers in the social care system, they put out these contracts now to various companies, and then they'll probably charge, they'll bill the NHS about 25 quid, and some of them then pay the actual carers as low as £6 an hour. It is, wow. It's buggered. But it is a tricky one. I know what you mean, Marina. It's tricky, isn't it?
But then they have to, out of that, they then have to pay for their own parking. And carers, I was reading, like, they don't get paid for the time that they're driving between one carer appointment to the other. Mm. Like, it's just, how are they supposed to make ends meet?
I know, and this idea that it's a vocation, you still want to be able to not starve to death.
Well, exactly. There's a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I'm not going to pretend I've read, but I know there's a bit in it that talks about basically how rich you are depends on how long you could survive without your next paycheck. Mm. Now, fair enough, but also the spiraling costs we've got, and, you know, the independent article I just mentioned earlier by Richard Murphy, because of spiraling costs, paychecks don't stretch like they used to. There's a lot of month left at the end of a paycheck. Mm. So, I don't know. I think what we're calling rich and wealthy actually has to have a real... We need to have a real think about that, mm-hmm. I think. Okay, now, I don't want to be a party pooper, but I definitely have the most depressing tweet of the week winner. Are you ready? Oh,
there must be so much competition, but yes.
So at Steve Swinford at the Times tweeted, Liz Truss begins filling key cabinet roles as allies say contest over Kwarteng, Chancellor, Braverman, Home Secretary, Sunak, likely to be offered health, Sahawi, alternative, cleverly, Foreign Office, Rees-Mogg, Foreign Office, Rees-Mogg gets levelling up. Or Department for Transport.
I mean, you look at this and you think, what is this hell? We've just suffered Johnson for so long and now we're getting these sort of creatures. Andy Burnham was thrilled, of course, delighted to think that Rees-Mogg might be the one charged with sorting out the huge discrepancy between infrastructure and opportunities in the north and south of the country, because he's so in touch. So Andy Burnham just said, heaven knows I'm miserable now. I mean, it's like, if you could just say who would be the worst candidate in the world, not even the country.
I love the idea that we're supposed to believe that the people that got us into this mess, those people, are going to be the ones that get us out.
But also, like, levelling up, like, who would be most sensible? Rees-Mogg, Paris Hilton, you know, like, just think of someone completely ludicrous.
And Sunak as well as health secretary. So I know this is obviously speculative, but didn't he say that he wouldn't work in Liz Truss's cabinet? If I made
yes,
it
no,
up?
He did. He did. So we'll see what happens there.
But he changes his mind. He talks lots of bollocks. In fact, he was caught lying again, pretending to be a man of the people. But this time, it wasn't him filling up his Kia car. It was he's basically so Save Ukraine tweeted this at Save Ukraine. He claimed to enjoy, he enjoys a McDonald's breakfast wrap with his daughters a few times a week. Now, at Save Ukraine, actually, let us know that breakfast wraps from McDonald's were removed from sale in 2020. And they said, when will members of this government stop lying? Why do you have to lie about a breakfast wrap?
You just know it's rubbish anyway. What? Imagine if you were in like a dodgy idiot. Old and McDonald's and you saw Rishi Sunak rolling his sleeves up. You'd be like, what are you doing here?
Is that supposed to be like a vote winner? It makes me go, oh, no, he gets a sausage wrap as well.
Yeah, you're so relatable. Oh, for him.
And at Save Ukraine followed up the tweet with, just maybe Rishi was telling the truth. Perhaps there are special branches of McDonald's just for billionaires and tax dodgers where there is a wider range of products. Oh, and I love these golden responses underneath, right? Mark Summers tweeted, after Mackie D's, he takes his daughter shopping to Woolworths. And then Paul Hodgin underneath that said, then it's off to Blockbusters to rent the recent releases for the weekend, although I bet he never rewinds the tapes afterwards.
It's so embarrassing, isn't it? And these little pathetic lies are almost huge because you think, I'll give over. Very funny. And then there was...
He's going to lie about the small stuff. Imagine what the big stuff he's going to lie about. He'll lie about anything.
Exactly. Sam Bright, who's a writer for Byline, at Writes Bright, also quoted him at another one of the Tory hustings. He said, I'm the most northern chancellor we've had in 70 years. Right. Rishi Sunak was born in Southampton, South Coast, educated in Winchester, South, Oxford, South, and Stanford, America. So again,
so
you're
northern.
Not really northern. You are as northern, Rishi Sunak, as Jacob Rees-Mogg is like down with the people. Jacob Rees-Mogg, is he even real? At Alex Wickham said, Sunak says, as a Southampton fan, he wants to get back to winning ways by beating Man United this weekend. Southampton are playing Leicester on Saturday.
Oh, God.
Every single flipping one. Unbelievable. Right. I've got underrated tweet of the week. Are you ready for it? So, Marina, we're going to have to go to the cinema together, my love, because there is a movie just for us. I suggest you pop that baby out and we have at least 3 litres of gin before it, because they've made a Boris Johnson movie.
Oh, God. I've seen it. I've seen the trailer. Jesus.
What the actual? Mm. I mean, I'm not into it when they... I mean, like, no. So at Populism Updates, basically did a little clip of the trailer, okay? And the trailer at the end finishes, This England, that is the name of the movie. And Marshall Law quote tweeted it and said, oh, this would have been so much better if it was an Armando Iannucci style comedy. Armando Iannucci being the person who wrote The Thick of It and sort of lots of Partridge stuff. He's basically a comedy genius. So Armando Iannucci clearly saw this little reference to him. He then quote tweeted the whole thing and so dry, just put, this pandemic was across the UK, not just England. Too late to change the title?
Oh, my God. Of course. They are so... oh, my God. But it's actually quite addictive, isn't it? It's just like, sod the rest of you. This is what we really
this
think.
This England.
Oh, it should just be called This London. That would probably be more
this
accurate,
West,
wouldn't it?
This Chequers? This... Yeah. This Bell End? You could just call it This Bell End. Oh, my God. Then I'd be bang up for seeing it. If we do go to the cinema...
I don't think that'd be shown in the cinema.
I'm genuinely going to take, like, tomatoes and stuff. In fact, why don't we just get a gang of friends together and sort it out with the cinema? Because obviously I've said we're not sort of French writers, we're British, so we have to be polite about it. Maybe put some towels down and things like that and protect the cinema. But just have the movie and just be allowed to pelt things at it. Would that help? I think maybe it would.
Feels like it'd be quite therapeutic. I'll be up for it.
Yeah. Anyway, if you have enjoyed this episode of our trawl, which is drawing to a close now, then we just want to say, firstly, thank you so much for supporting and listening. We're loving all your feedback and your lovely tweets and stuff like that. And also, just share it. We just want to just extend the trawl to anybody who might find it a bit of light relief, frankly.
Yes, we do. Like, I certainly feel better.
I do.
This
I feel
like
better.
A therapy session.
I feel better.
Mm-mm. But before we go, as you know, we like to leave a little treat, a little pudding for you. And this week's cherry is from at Aid Thompson. So I love this guy. He's one of the good guys. His content is so good. He should have so many followers. He deserves many more than he has.
He is
brilliant. I don't know why he's not got more. In fact, just sorry, he actually posted an awesome blog article this week with so many nuggets. And my favourite bit was he said, because in my opinion, the Tory party functions purely as an administration team for billionaires who buy policy little more. And I just thought that was so perfect, so true, and delivered in the neatest little nutshell. But that's not a pudding. Our pudding from Aid is this. It's a wonderful video on how, thanks to the Tory cost of living crisis, staying in has now become the new going out. Enjoy.
Joining us now is Ed Thompson to talk about the cost of living.
Yes, yes, that's right, James. We are now about 3 months away max from staying in becoming an activity reserved exclusively for the rich and super rich. You will be aware that traditionally this is the way that working people save money. If you are looking to get a house deposit together, you might decide to stay in for 40 or 50 years. Maybe you're looking for a holiday. Next year, you might stay in. Although, let's be real, you know, with holidays, the airports are fucking chaos and Dover Calais is gridlocked. So maybe now is a better time to staycation. You could jet down to Devon and go for a swim in that sea of shit.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
No, staying in is going to be largely off the table for regular people like me and you. It will be lauded in hip-hop videos as some sort of status symbol, you know? People who can afford to stay in their own house. Oh my fucking Christ. People who don't have frostbite in their fingers will wave them around in hip-hop videos with P. Diddy like it's a fucking gold chain. Women will chase men, not on the basis that they have a nice shiny Rolex or the brand of their suit. No, they will go to the golf club and see a man ordering a whiskey at the bar and they will check if he has fully functioning digits.
Oh, Jesus fucking
You might
Christ.
Wonder, well, why are they at the golf club? A golf club seems like an expensive place to hang out if you're having trouble paying your bills, James. But here's where it gets really funny. Actually, hanging out at a golf club will be cheaper than staying in your flat. Staying in your flat doing nothing will become an opulent fucking fantasy for most people. People will ask each other where they went on holiday that year. Did you go to Benidorm? Did you go to Greece? Maybe the south of France? Maybe you went to Mauritius. Where did you go, you rotter? You tell me. Oh, well, actually, we just stayed back at our house, didn't we, Della? Oh, my fucking God. You must be minted.
There must be some upside to this.
Well, yes. Yes, there is actually, James. If you cannot afford to heat your home and you do freeze to death, you can take solace in the fact that your meat will be perfectly preserved and will thaw out just in time around February or March for our betters to enjoy your ribs